It's on. Okay. Good morning. It is Thursday, March 24, 2016, 10 a.m. My name is Lee Ron. I'm hearing examiner today. We have one, or actually two items on the agenda, but a combined hearing on those. They are the Monarch Ridge Preliminary Plat and Ridgeview Plat Alteration, numbers 1403958 and number 1503388. Just as a matter of a couple of preliminary matters, in case there's someone that hasn't been here before, the order of business that we'll be conducting today, I will be hearing from the county at first hear their presentation on the staff report and their recommendations. After that, after the county makes a presentation, we'll be hearing from the applicant. And after the applicant testifies, then I'll open it up for public comment. The record is being made by virtue of a recording. So when you testify, anybody but testifies, please go up to the podium so that you're at a microphone. So if you say something and you're not at a microphone, then it's not part of the record. If anybody has any exhibits, they can be presented during the testimony. There's two sets of exhibits that have already been provided, and there are lists of those exhibits on the back counter. And just for purposes of today's hearing, we have one list of exhibits for the Monarch Ridge Preliminary Plat, and we'll refer to those as M for Monarch, 1, 2, 3, and so on and so forth. And then we have another set of exhibits for the Ridgeview Plat Alteration, and we'll refer to these exhibits as R, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so forth. So because the numbers are same, we want to make sure that we know what exhibits we're referring to. Anybody who's testifying will be sworn to tell the truth, and so we'll do that at the beginning of any testimony. With regard to the exhibits, unless there's an objection during the hearing, I'll assume that the exhibits which are indicated on the lists that have been provided in the back will be admitted as part of the record, and will be appropriate to be considered. If anybody has any objections, when we have an opportunity to testify, you can raise those objections, and then I'll rule on those at that time. So I think that pretty much covers the preliminary matters. So we'll go ahead and hear from the county. You swear affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Thank you. And state your name for the record.
My name is Jeff Smith. I'm representing Kitsap County Department of Community Development, senior planner. First, I'd like to include some exhibits into the record. And this would be the PowerPoint presentation, and that would be M26. Next. And the next one is George Kepson. I believe I pronounced that right. He submitted written comments after the notice of application went out.
What do we want to number that one?
That would be M27.
Okay.
I apologize. That would be R20.
R20.
And the next one is comments sent to Dennis Ost based on the notice of application for the, and that is from Michael Pang. And that would be R21.
Any others?
That'll be it for now.
Okay. Any objections to the admission of these exhibits? Seeing none, they will be admitted. Thank you.
As stated earlier, my name is Jeff Smith. I'm representing Kitsap County Department of Community Development. I'm a senior planner with the department, and I have over 20 years of planning experience reviewing similar projects. The proposal today is for a preliminary plat for 33 lots with 2.24 acres, provide 33 new homes for new families. The project includes a native vegetation buffer, open space area around the perimeter of the recreation area. It consists of two parcels. Both are zoned urban low, and they're currently vacant. The parcels or lots will vary in size from approximately 4,000 square feet to 9,000 square feet. Roads will be private, and the development will access off of Northwest Poppy Court, and the project will be served by sanitary sewer and public water. The proposal is reviewed for consistency, with Title 16 Land Division and Development. The proposal also includes an alteration, plat alteration to alter Ridge View Division 2, a residential subdivision recorded in 1993. It involves specifically Lot 11, which will be modified. It will be primarily accessed to the Monarch Ridge. The request is to hear both proposals at one time.
Okay.
And my, as far as what I understand is the hearing examiner was directing the county to hear these together in the previous decision.
That's my understanding also.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Lot 11 is approximately 6,000 square feet. It's 50 feet wide, 120 feet deep. And as recorded on the plat, the proposal includes a 30-foot road track, separate tracks of 5.46 feet on the east side, and then 14 and a half feet on the west side. The responsible official signed a determination of non-significance on December 28, 2015, and the appeal period ended January 12, 2016, and there was no appeals. Just a second.
Okay.
we're having slight technical difficulties. We're working through it. I apologize for the delay.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you. Okay, the property is vacant, it's square shaped, it's 10.24 acres in size. The property is bordered on residential development on two sides. The site overall slopes gently, moderately towards the east and west, and there's old drainage ravines on half the site, up to 50% slopes. And there's steep slopes over here.
Are you
over here? I mean,
excuse me. Are you picking him up on the microphone for the record, or because I don't.
How about now?
I can hear you on the mic now. Okay. Before I.
The site is mostly treed. Includes second growth timber with mixed vegetation and an understory. Majority of the site slopes 5 to 10% to the east. And there are bench areas on the property. And the Kitsap County resource maps show moderate slopes. It's difficult to see on this reproduction, but there's a ribbon of pink that goes through the parcel, and that identifies the moderate slope area that's identified in the county resource maps. As you can see, there is another large parcel adjacent to the property that's not connected with this project. Property is zoned urban low residential, and that's 5 to 9 dwelling units per acre. The property has been zoned for residential development prior to the adoption of the comprehensive plan for the Growth Management Act. So it's been through our comprehensive plan, it's been designated urban low since 1998 when our plan was validated. This map is just to show the general topography on the property and give a general layout. Includes the open space tracts on the lower. Actually, this is north. So north is that way, and this is the east side. So there's two open space tracts. They're not going to be developed with the stormwater facility in the center. The property or project has a recreational track in the center, and that's consistent with county policy as far as it's centrally located, and it's on roughly level ground, provide access to everybody within the plat. This map shows the layout shows the hammerhead turnarounds on both ends and the connection to Northwest Poppy Court. What this mainly illustrates is the road network and the on-street parking, which the applicant is consistent with the on-street parking requirement of 0.5 per unit. So the road tracks take up 12% of the site. The open space tracks, to the east side, they are 30% of the site, and they range from 60,000 to 40,000 square feet in size. There's two. The lot area is 42%. The net developable area is 4.3 acres. That comes in at 7.7 dwelling units per acre. The purpose of this map is to show how the proposed development, it's a schematic map, but it shows how that interfaces with the residential neighborhood around it. Shows the private access across lot 11, and the access to a majority of the lots at least, and stormwater track, and you can also see the subject properties or the properties around the development, and they're fairly dense. And over to the west, those are slightly larger. So the preliminary plat analysis, what we do is review the proposal against 16.24040 for urban standards. And the ones we look at mostly in this particular case is access, as meets the access requirements for a private road, off-street parking and on-street parking. Off-street parking will be validated or reviewed at time of building permit for each individual home. And the on-street parking will be reviewed during construction of the plat. The proposal is reviewed by the Fire Marshal's Office, and they've approved the proposal. And the only request they had was striping in certain areas where there's no parking is permitted, and maintaining fire flow. I said earlier, the utilities are going to be Kitsap County Wastewater Division. Provide sewer service, and Silverdale Water District will provide potable water supply or also fire flows. The next section that is referenced is 16.04008, general provisions, appropriate facilities and improvements. And under one of the findings is that the project falls within the density of the zone of urban low, and the proposed density is based on that developable area. And that was correctly calculated. The next one is adequacy of access. The applicant has addressed public safety for providing adequate access for ingress and egress to the Monarch Ridge plat. The next one is safe walking conditions. And pursuant to Title 16 and the development standards in Title 17, sidewalks are required. And the applicant's providing sidewalks at least on one side of the private roads. And so the main requirement is that there's a vertical curb against any parking areas with the sidewalk. So there's no parking on the sidewalk. At least it prohibits that. And the lot configuration shows right angles, and that there's no, it's consistent with that requirement. So the next section is for the plat alteration. Code requires a plat alteration to any final recorded plat. It has to be recorded, or the alteration is required after 7 years after this has been altered. The Ridgeview Division 2 is a residential subdivision that was approved in 1993. The Lot 11 was modified to address the access. The department's reviewed this, the access and how it's being provided, and it's based on our interpretation of the code and the RCW, it's not creating corner lots. As you can see on the overhead, as the properties that are abutting based on how it's configured are not abutting the roadway, creating corner lots. One track here is approximately 5 feet, another track here is 14 feet.
I'm sorry, in looking at the diagram, what would you go over that again about it's, I lost track.
Well, at the previous hearing, there was some concern about this roadway
right.
creating corner lots.
Right. And I just didn't follow what you were saying about there's no corner.
So the way the boundary line adjustment, which we don't have a boundary line adjustment ordinance,
okay,
created separate tracks between the property owners on either on the east and west side.
Okay.
So they're within a separate property, and therefore they're not don't have exterior side yards. It would create corner lots, creating non-conforming homes. And that was a major concern by the other hearing center.
In looking at the diagram that's part of the PowerPoint there, the two tracks on either side of the road, are they connected to the larger of the two parcels that are part of the preliminary plat? I see there's no line across the
top. They are physically connected to the 10-acre parcel.
Are they legally connected? Are they part of the parcel here?
Well, they're connected. You have two parcels here.
Okay.
You have tax lot 55.
Right.
And then you have tax lot 56.
And tax lot 56 is the one that goes all the way down to Poppy Court?
That's correct.
Okay, all right.
And that area is 30 feet as far as that.
Okay, so those tracks on either side are no longer part of the ridgeway then?
Right.
Right, okay. All right, just wanted to make sure I understood.
This is going to provide more clarity, I hope. As I indicated earlier, the road track is 30 feet on the west side. This dividing track is 14.5 feet, and then there's a along the adjacent property, the track is 5.5 feet approximately. And the existing or plat does have a natural vegetation strip that runs along the back of the property. And we acknowledge that that by putting the road through, it does interrupt that. And we asked the applicant to include additional open space around the subject property that's being subdivided. And the applicant has provided that. The alteration is required to be reviewed as a Type 3 permit. As stated earlier, it's consolidated with the preliminary plat application, which is also the Type 3 application. The applicant's required to have signatures of the majority of people who are affected. And based on the proposal, is the applicant is the only person being affected, and there's a signature to this project through the application. The next one is, does it change any alteration to the existing subdivision? Is the alteration does not change any of the other plat characteristics. Just changing lot 11. Roadway is still intact. There's no other mechanisms there or stormwater facilities are impacted with the change of this. It's just dealing with lot 11 for access. So the applicant is only required to provide a signature. As I stated earlier, the alterations does change the vegetation buffer. And as shown in the original, in the preliminary plat map, it shows the natural vegetation buffer around the perimeter of the development. Based on our review, the alteration of the natural vegetation buffer doesn't require a public hearing. But the department has determined that this is a good way to address the requirement and be consistent with what was on the previous plat. Previous planner put together a visual of the plat, how it interfaces with the residential neighborhood. And Brandon Beast are a combo as far as cul-de-sac and hammerhead. Those have been changed. However, the lot layout and the open space tracts that are included, it shows how it interfaces with the neighborhood on either side of the area. And it's not too radically different from what's around it. And it also has an open space tract for any additional impacts, providing just general open space. We received public comments from Kitsap Transit. There are concerns about the transit facility within the area. There actually is. Ridgetop Boulevard lacks effective crossing points for pedestrians to reach bus stops. And Kitsap Transit would like to provide information to the future owners. The next one is George Conception. His concern is the lot was not intended for vehicular access. And if we looked at all the alternatives, he still has a concern about corner lots and how these can be moved around to create a larger buffer if need be. There might be potential drainage issues. He had a question about where the location of the utilities are and the history. This has already been applied for and been denied. And if this proposal is not denied, he requests a wall to be built and landscaping to mitigate noise and provide a safety barrier. And he lives on this adjacent parcel right here.
So are the comments from George Concepcion that you're referring to Exhibit 20, on Exhibit 20?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Then Michael Pang, we found that and in the record when the NOA, notice of application went out. And he has concerns that this violates the existing building codes and regulations that are part of the original subdivision.
Do we have an exhibit, or was that commented in writing? Do we have
yes, it is. That was the second one. 21? The R21. In the previous planner, it responded back and explained the department's determination.
Oh, I was looking at the wrong heading. That's Exhibit 21. Sure, thank you.
So the department gave proper public notice, consistent with Title 21. Based on the comments in the staff report, the department recommends approval of the Monarch Ridge preliminary plat and the Ridgeview plat alteration with the 46 conditions in the staff report.
Okay. I have a few questions. You mentioned that the fire department provided comments. Were those comments in writing?
Yes, they're included in the staff report.
I think they were summarized. Do you have an actual exhibit that you could provide to us with the fire department's comments?
I can do that, yes.
Okay. A couple of things I was wondering about. When you talked about getting the signatures of the affected parties. Are you applying RCW, the standards of RCW 5817-215, or are you applying a different section under, say, the county code? Or...
Yes, I believe it's, 5817.
215?
Yeah.
Okay.
Based on the RCW, that's what we're basing it on.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that the language that we're talking about, I have specific reference to it. In looking at the, are the roads in the existing Ridgeview plat, are they public or private roads?
They're public.
They're public? Okay. So there wouldn't be anything or any way for the access to be cut off through that subdivision then?
No.
Okay. And the roads within the Monarch will be private?
That's correct.
Okay.
And based on the applicant's proposal, there's no future connectivity with any adjacent properties.
Okay. Looking at just some housekeeping matters, looking at R10, which would be the Ridgeway Exhibit 10, this is, it appears to be a staff report for the 2009 hearing, but it has a January 16 date scratched out. I want to make sure that staff report is actually one that was submitted for the 2009
hearing. That is, yes. Yes, that's an error as far as the autofill with.
That's what I figured. I just wanted to make sure that we had that on the record. Also, in the staff report, that Exhibit 10, the 2009 staff report, there are parcel numbers referred to there, and I don't have the page, but they end in 2007 and 2006. What do those parcel numbers refer to? They're right on the bottom of the first page on R10. Those are assessor's account numbers, so maybe they're not parcel numbers.
Yeah, those are, it's a county assessor numbers.
Uh-huh.
And they, I believe, they're referring to the same general parcels. Because this was, there's another BLA that occurred in 2010. So the assessor assigns new parcel numbers.
Okay. I'm not sure if this is a question I should pose to the applicant or not, but I'm not clear of the kind of the way the interface between the boundary line adjustment and this tax issue that's also referenced in the. Exhibits. It looked to me like in reviewing the exhibits, there was some sort of a tax sale of a portion or all of Lot 11? Do you recall that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's, I'm referring to, this would be R-17. There's a memo from a Daniel Phillips regarding tax title streams.
Oh, yes, yes. There was an access that was planned through, I believe, a tax title strip to the north of this project, or northeast, I believe. And that was sold, and that affected the property owner to have legal access to his property. So it's been designated urban low for many years, and he didn't have Mr. Harris didn't have access to his property.
Okay, I was just kind of wondering why the tax title strip information was here and how it affected what we're doing today.
The reason why staff included that is just kind of to provide some background information. How did he get here today?
Okay, and so that strip of property that they're talking about in 17, that's not the same as the property that was subject to the boundary line adjustment?
No.
Okay.
The county, from time to time, sells off tax title strips. There's a process that we go through with the prosecuting attorney's office and public works in our department. Okay. And that's what occurred.
Okay. I guess I didn't connect the two in my mind, that they were different pieces of property or the same. Trying to figure out which set of exhibits I'm referring to here. Where's my card? Okay. We had a question about R6. This would be the Ridgeview 6 exhibit. Does that have anything to do with this proposal?
No, it does not.
So this is...
It can be struck.
Okay, we can remove that exhibit then.
Yes.
Okay. Exhibit R8. Indicates that on the notice of application that the project is SEPA exempt, and then there was a DNS issued, and then there were conditions on the DNS, just so that we have clarity on the SEPA. Was the project exempt? If there was a DNS, is the DNS should be at a mitigated DNS because it has conditions, or what's? Can you clarify kind of where we were on this SEPA?
Well, the project went through an optional notice of application.
Okay.
And the planner at the time, it was his belief that this was exempt.
Okay.
The purpose of the optional notification under SEPA, you put it out there and get comments, and then you might change your proposed mitigation.
Okay.
The conditions that are included are standard. They deal with roads and stormwater that are already pretty much addressed in code.
Okay.
Staff includes these as provide more clarity as far as these are being mitigated or addressed through the code.
So the conditions really aren't mitigating any SEPA concerns particular to this project?
No. And because this is a Type 3 permit, it's a higher order permit, it's not necessarily SEPA exempt.
Okay. Going to back to Exhibit 10, this would be the earlier staff report for this project. Back, I guess, in 2009, and this would be just for clarity. I believe we're talking about R10. On pages 10 and 11, the staff report at that time, and I think I'm correct in saying that you weren't the one that wrote that earlier report. What I'm asking about is there are certain findings that are indicated on page 10 of the staff report where the recommendations to deny the plat alteration at that time, maybe it was the plat, I think again, maybe it's combined. I call your attention to numbers 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. These were findings of the staff at that time, or the county at that time, where they felt that the plat alteration should be denied. And I'd just like to have go through those briefly to see what may have changed to change the mind of the county. The first one would be number two, that I was, the proposed development has not complied with all applicable provisions of the ordinance and other regulations, including performance standards such as creating front yard setbacks, inconsistencies, and having RCW signatory inconsistencies. We may have dealt with the signatory issue. What about the side yards? Has anything changed with regard
yes.
to that?
Yes. Okay. The way the under the boundary line adjustment that was recorded, that addresses the exterior side yard requirements.
Okay. And number three, in the staff report, the earlier staff report, Exhibit R10, there's a comment that it would generate incompatibility with lots adjacent to the proposed roadway. And I think they're referring to the road through 11. Development of lands using the roadway would be create incompatibility with roadways of the existing development within the land use designation without additional mitigation. What would have changed on that, if anything?
The proposal, I believe, back then was significant more homes.
Okay.
And at one time there was looked at as a public road.
Okay.
Granted, there are going to be some impacts. Mm-hmm. However, the neighbor has proposed some kind of mitigation.
Okay. And in conjunction with that, there's I guess it's an exhibit to the Monarch, but there's a traffic study that's, I think, goes back to 2009 too. Is that traffic study still relevant or not?
It is relevant in the way that it provides a larger number of trip vehicle trips on a larger development, and it's within this project is within that threshold of as the traffic analysis.
Is my recollection correct that the original proposal for Monarch was over 60 homes or lots, and now we're talking about
34?
Okay, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The finding in the old report number 4, the subject site is not physically wide enough for a public roadway and not physically wide enough for a private roadway without creating nonconformities in adjacent lots and impacts to these that cannot be mitigated. That's number 4. Would you address how that may have changed or no longer applies?
Number 1, the road is now being proposed is private.
Private, okay.
Number 2, this is staff's interpretation of the code at the time. It's not staff's interpretation now.
Okay. The finding number 5 in the old staff reports, the proposed alteration would be detrimental to the public interest of those residents of Ridgeview Division 2 fronting on affected roadways. Could you comment on what may have changed, if anything, on that?
Well, the proposal has been reduced,
okay,
as far as number of dwelling units. And it's now a private road. There are going to be some impacts to the adjacent neighbors. But this time, it's our understanding there wouldn't be a detrimental impact to the adjacent property owners.
Okay.
It's going to be a local access road. Okay. It's not like they're putting in a collector or anything like that.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm trying to speak for somebody that wrote something years ago. But it's part of the record, and it was also a basis for the prior hearing examiner's decision. So I kind of want to sort out what may be different and what changed, particularly since we've got a decision already and a staff report that's part of this record. Number 6 is abandoning or altering the perimeter native growth and protection easement as recorded on the Ridgeway Division plat. I require signatures and approval through the subdivision alteration, and they refer to RCW 5817-215. I think you may have already addressed that.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And if I understand your testimony, it no longer requires signatures other than the owner of that track at this point because of.
That's based on our interpretation of the RCW 58. This has been vetted through our legal folks as
okay.
well.
And number 7 on that old finding was altering a single-family residential lot is a land use change affecting multiple owners in the recorded plat. I think you testified that there would be impacts or effects on the owners. Can you elaborate on that a little bit as to what those impacts might be?
There'll be some impacts with noise and light.
Okay. And I think you testified before that we almost have the number of proposed units in the new development then.
Yes.
Since this was a concern.
Yes.
Okay. And then number 8 is changing lot 11 to a road is a significant land use change affecting numerous properties in the Ridge Division and requires approval through RCW 17 or 5817215. I think you've addressed that.
Yes, that's what we're pursuing today.
Okay. All right. So is it the county's position at this time that those prior concerns, which were part of the recommendation of denial back in 2009 and part of the decision denying the application then, have been satisfied?
They've been satisfied by the county.
The staff report on page 10 also says denial of the alteration request will not deny legal access to the undeveloped parcel. I think you testified now that there's no other access.
There's no other access.
And is that, was that changed by this tax sale? How did that?
Yes, that's correct.
Why are we talking about
that? Yeah, that was what changed. That caused this ball to start rolling. Writing, trying to find access to the property.
Okay.
And let me reiterate again, the Board of County Commissioners have designated this as urban low, so the plan has always been to be developed as okay. urban low.
Now, is that, I know you testified that Ridgeway was developed before the comprehensive plan was adopted by the county or approved. Is it consistent with the Monarch, consistent with the current comprehensive plan?
Yes, it is.
And what is the comp plan designation for this area?
It's urban low.
Okay, same as the zoning then.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why is the smaller parcel, why does it have that hook? Kind of, you've got lot 11, and then it kind of hooks to the east as it goes into the big parcel.
Mm-hmm. Usually a fish hook includes the same ownership, but separate parcels, generally.
And... Are both parcels owned by the same party? Okay. I guess I'm still not clear why we have the fish hook or why it was necessary or whatever.
It's the way it was drawn up by the surveyor.
Okay.
And let me go back to that. Those are fish hooks show that these properties are under the same ownership, but they're separate.
Okay.
And they provide there's a physical connection.
I apologize for taking time here. I'm kind of going through, tearing off my little post-its because you've talked about most of this stuff. So, for the record, could you explain what the boundary line adjustment did?
A boundary line adjustment is a way to alter property boundary using existing property lines without creating a new lot. Generally, it's used in most cases to, like it's say, a neighbor encroaches their garage on your property and you work it out. You can do a boundary line adjustment to adjust that property line to deal with the encroachment. That's generally how it's applied.
So in this case, the boundary line adjustment was done for the purpose of creating those two buffer strips between the road, the roadway, and the neighboring properties?
Yes. And the counties looked at that, analyzed it, and determined that that it's acceptable.
Turning to the Monarch exhibits, page 12 of the staff report refers to the Monarch project is a preliminary plat slash PPD. Is this
no.
PPD applied?
No. It's a typo.
Just as a clarification on exhibit M25, we have a notice of application date, which is exhibit 23, dated January 14. But exhibit 25 says that the application was published and mailed on January 9. So we've got something mailed before it was dated. There's reference in the staff report, I believe, on page 2 to a revised notice of application on January 14. Were there two notices that went out, or can you?
Yes, there was two notices that went out. There was a notice that went out for the Monarch Ridge. The applicant applied for the lot alteration under the Title 16. And another notice of application went out.
Okay.
So based on, normally these would be looked at together, but based on the interpretation of the code, then the applicant applied separately for these projects.
Okay. Notice of application on the January 14, 2015, which is exhibit number 23, just refers to the preliminary plat for Monarch and not the plat amendment to Ridgeway. Is that appropriate notice, or is it a different notice, or can you clarify on this?
It's a different notice.
Okay.
Not clear why they weren't looked at together.
So do we have a copy of the notice that was mailed on January 9? Is that a different notice, or was the 14? I'm still confused
there
here.
There are two different notices.
Two different notices.
One is in September, one is in January.
Well, we've got two in. We got a January notice, not January 14, but the certificate of public notice that was signed that we have as Exhibit 25 indicates that it was mailed on January 9th. So the confusion is that how can you mail a notice that was dated 5 days after it was mailed?
I don't have an answer at this point.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to clarify our notice. The standard question we always ask is, has the comprehensive plan or zoning code been amended since the date of the completed application on October 27, 2014? On, is there a difference between exhibits M3 and M8, or are they duplicates, or should I be looking for something different in those? I just kind of went through them.
One is supplemental.
I just wanted to. They looked similar to me, so I didn't know if they were the same or.
They're similar.
Yeah, they're dated, received the same date, October 27, 2014. Actually, given the way this stamp is, they seem to be the same. So I didn't know if there was just a duplicate or there was something I was supposed to gather from that. They appear to be duplicates?
Yes.
Okay. And would you also take a look at exhibits M16 and 17 and see whether they're the same, relatively the same, or overlapping? The reason I'm asking is...
No, they're separate. They're separate? Two different things.
Okay.
These are maps. 16 are maps generated by our GIS system.
Okay.
And then 17 are the... 8x11 sheets for the engineering and site plan.
Okay.
For the Monarch Ridge development.
The staff report refers to this project as being low-impact development. Is there a particular standard that's applied in determining whether something is low-impact or not?
Based on my knowledge of the project, it's not proposing any specific low-impact development. Staff's looked at the open space, based on the 3 acres of open space that have been identified and no development, that addresses the low impact requirement.
On page 11 of the staff report, it says the department has agreed to waive the requirements for a natural vegetation buffer. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. As mentioned earlier, the final plat of Ridgeview Division 2 had a natural vegetation buffer along, or easement along, that north property line. And what this, we've looked at this, and like it's like a higher order permit to change that, but we are conditioning it that this natural vegetation buffer be included with the Monarch Ridge preliminary plat, which the applicant is doing.
Um, There was a KITSAP transit comment about effective crossing points for pedestrians to reach their buses. What about school buses, sir? How does did you get any comments from the school districts on this?
No.
Where would the kids from this pick up the
school? I believe they could be I believe that they're going to be at the where the local access road access to the Bridgeview plat. So students would walk down Poppy and then to Lobelia and to Marigold to Ridgetop Boulevard.
Okay, thank you. Were the school districts asked to provide comments?
They're on our normal distribution list. Since this is a developed pretty much where the buses come in, it's developed already. Provisions are made. If it was an undeveloped site, staff would definitely solicit comments from the local school district. And the elementary school and Ridgetop Junior High are within walking distance.
Thank you. I think that's pretty much the questions I have right now. And if before we close, you could get me a copy of the fire department's comments, that would be great. And if you can come up with a clarification on these notice dates, that would be helpful too. Just so I can, we generally put that into the decisions and so forth. So
okay.
Is there anything else on behalf of the county?
Not this time.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll hear from the applicant.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you'll give today would be the truth?
I do.
Okay. And state your name for the record, please.
My name is Mark Kuhlman. I'm with Team 4 Engineering. And
could
I've been working.
Your last name?
Kuhlman, Kuhlman.
Okay. Thank you.
I've been working with the applicant on this project for some time now. First, I want to compliment staff on putting together a good staff report. I think it was clear, concise, and correct. Those are the three C's that engineers love, and we always like it when planners come up with the same kind of reports.
So do hearing examiners.
I bet you do. So I think it was very straightforward staff report, pretty succinct, to the point, and we agree with what's in that staff report, and we accept all the conditions of approval as laid out in there. I did share some of the concerns that you discussed about the SEPA conditions of approval being included in the SEPA determination. I felt they were more appropriate as just general conditions of approval because SEPA should be addressing things that really aren't already addressed by code. But we're fine with it. The property has been described as about 10.24 acres. Consisted of a 10-acre parcel originally, and then Ridgeview Division 2, Lot 11, was purchased by the applicant at the original final platting time. The houses were under construction in Ridgeview Division 2 at the time, and the applicant, in order to perfect access, purchased that Lot 11. I'm going to use some of Mr. Smith's presentation materials here. To clarify a couple of things that have been confusing over the years, it was the luck of the draw that Ridgewood Division 2 and a later division of Ridgewood put Lot 11 side by side. This is Lot 11 of Ridgeview Division 2, and this is Lot 11 of the adjacent division. They just happen to be side by side, so I didn't want any confusion to come from seeing an 11 adjacent to the 11 that's being modified by the road tract.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. One of the things that's been discussed previously is the original application had 61 lots. We have pulled back on that application. We paid more attention to some of the critical areas or the steep slope areas, and our stormwater is modified some. Also, a requirement for a recreation amenity came into play during the periods of review on this. So we are providing open space tracks to address the steep slope areas. And we are providing a recreation amenity open space tract. The code currently requires 390 square feet per lot. So that, I don't remember the numbers exactly, but with 33 lots, that was somewhere around 12 or 13,000 square feet required. Our tract is about 15,000 square feet. So it exceeds code. One of the things that Mr. Smith discussed was the provision of a native vegetation protection buffer around the perimeter of this project. That comes about for two different reasons. One, we had gotten some feedback from the surrounding neighborhoods that at the time they developed, buffers were fairly common. With the passage of the Growth Management Act and subsequent urban or comprehensive plan approvals, buffering between residential projects is sort of recognized as an inefficient use of urban growth land. However, we felt it was important to comply with the county's consideration on the provision of a native vegetation buffer to match that which is in our surrounding development. So we have provided that. I want to talk a little bit about the boundary line adjustment. You had a question about the boundary line adjustment. Currently, Kitsap County does not have a boundary line adjustment ordinance, so there isn't a review procedure. But those of us in the industry understand what the county's expectations are regarding boundary line adjustments, and one of them is to not create non-conforming lots. So we did the boundary line adjustment, and it you see the road stem here, and then there's an area up in here off of this page that constitutes the legal lot of record, a legal building parcel. So whether or not we were required to do that by code, it has always been known to us the intention of the county is that boundary line adjustments should not create non-conforming parcels. And so this strip at only 30 feet wide doesn't meet minimum lot width, but the rest of the flag up interior to the project did create that legal lot of record. One of the things that was a discussion before, and we used the boundary line adjustment to clarify how this road wasn't going to create non-conforming lots on either side of it. There had been discussion that these lots were going to be corner lots. We said they're not corner lots because they don't abut the roadway tract. Kitsap County has three words that all mean the same thing in their code: abutting, adjacent, and adjoining are all defined by code to basically say they have to be the same line or at least be the same line for a distance of 10 feet. So lot 10 and 11 shown here do not abut a roadway. Therefore, they are not corner lots. Now, we tried to be sensitive to that in another way as well. Required front yard setbacks for a home to a garage is 20 feet. Required setbacks to a living area is 10 feet. And so that explains why we're 5 feet on one side and 15 feet on the other, so that that boundary of the road tract, even though it's not abutting the lot line, would still provide the same setback as if they were abutting. So we tried to come at this with a belt and suspenders approach. They're not abutting, but the distance between the edge of the road tract and the dwellings would comply with the code. And that was our intent there. So we have reviewed the public comments. Mr. Concepcion, who owns Lot 11, has made a request that there be landscaping and a separation barrier. I think his term was a wall. We are prepared to provide solid wood fence along both of those lot lines. That would be the east line of Lot 10 and the west line of Lot 11. Not proposing that they extend necessarily the full length of the lot, because when we get to Poppy Court, I don't want that fence to be an obstruction to line of sight for safety. So we may pull the end of that fence back 10 feet or more to maintain sight distances for safety. But we were sensitive to their concerns, and we will be doing landscaping, and we will provide that privacy fencing for that.
Should that be a condition, or how would that be reflected?
We would make that a proposal to the applicant, which we would allow you to make a condition of approval on that. Okay. I can put this into the record if it's not already covered by one of those other exhibits, which was talking about the tax title strip.
I think, do have that in the record someplace.
And I think it's the same one. But basically, that tax title strip was going to be used to perfect the legal access to this 10-acre parcel, which was otherwise landlocked. When that tax title strip was abandoned by the county, the applicant, the property owner, went about procuring alternate legal access. So that's one thing that wasn't well discussed in the previous discussion, is that It's in the exhibits, but there was a revision to the CCNRs for Ridgewood Division 2 that allowed Lot 11 or portions thereof to be used for a roadway to access this adjoining parcel. So, as you can imagine, over the years, there was a lot of discussion between the applicant and the county about the need for a plat alteration when the CCNRs had already provided for this as legal access. However, in an effort to go along, to get along, we have made the application for this final plat alteration. We agree, we concur with the county that the only affected parcels are owned by the applicant, and therefore he's the only one that needs to sign this final plat alteration application. I also know that the burden of proof is on the applicant to show that we have complied with all the rules and regulations in place, and I think that that's been done through the application materials, and I think that the staff report, since they're recommending approval, also has recognized that we have provided compliance with all applicable codes and regulations that might apply to these two applications. Do you have any questions for the applicant?
You mentioned something about the the SEPA. I think the SEPA checklist includes a provision where you're supposed to identify any other necessary approvals. And in this particular case, it didn't identify the roadway or the plat modification. Should it have been in there or not?
I guess we're here today, so it probably should have been listed as another approval that's required. Probably a remnant from our discussion that we didn't think an alteration was required, so that's probably an oversight on our part. We should have included that as a...
Do you recall when the CCNRs were amended to reflect that the Lot 11 could be used as a roadway?
I think the dates are on there. However, the Ridgeview Division 2 final plat had been recorded. We did a lot of investigation. This is some years back, so the dates aren't fresh in my memory, and I apologize for that. But we did a lot of research with attorneys to demonstrate and comfort ourselves that the revisions to the CCNRs were performed by the declarant at a point in time where he still had control of the CCNRs. The declarant was going to turn over control of CCNR revisions when a certain percentage of the lots had been developed and sold. And it was clear at the time that he made the amendment to the CCNRs that those thresholds had not been reached, and he retained the ability to modify the CCNRs on his own. So therefore, the sale of that lot to the applicant was conditioned upon the revision of those CCNRs to provide the legal access that the applicant was searching for. Okay.
You mentioned that the applicant agrees to and accepts all the proposed conditions of the county. And that's correct. As a matter of timing, condition 13 requires binding water and sewer availability letters for final approval. I think you've got letters as this would be M10 and 11. They're already a couple of years old. Do you have any problem with that condition?
No, I don't. Frankly, the water and sewer availability letters have always been kind of an interesting thing for me. At the first years after the approval of the Growth Management Act, we were looking for binding letters of availability for preliminary land use approvals. And I really don't know when that changed, that these non-binding ones fulfill the bill. But that has been standard practice here and in all the jurisdictions that I work in. At final plat time, the utility availability becomes binding with the building permit application. And so at that time is when we need the binding letters. So to me, this was already a condition of approval that's been fulfilled.
I don't think I have any other questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. My normal procedure is after the public speaks, I will come up and respond to any questions or comments that they might have.
That's the procedure. I follow it also and give the county an opportunity to respond also.
Thank you.
Okay. Nothing else by the applicant at this time? Okay, we'll open it up for public comments. I have a sign-in sheet here for public comments of Michael Pangui. Okay, I apologize. You want to go up to the microphone, please? Raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give today will be the truth? Okay, and state your name for the record, please.
Good morning. I'm examiner and everyone here. I'm Michael Pangui, and I reside in Lot 11 of Lot 10, I'm sorry, of Ridgeview Subdivision 2, which is adjacent to the west of Lot 11. So I'm right next door. I got a few questions, and I'll try to be short and sweet. Here's a copy of what I've just seen today. The proposal is to change that lot into a road. And for all intents and purposes, when the subdivision was established, it was supposed to be a residential lot. So therefore, all the provisions for utilities and roads and access and all that is intended for just one lot, one residential lot. So the question is, how can we change that owners or the adjacent lots and those who are around it do not have signatures required for a proposed alteration of that lot? Because if I look here, page 11
of what?
Of the
staff report. Okay.
Letter C says the alteration applications and documents to be recorded shall contain signatures of majority of these persons having ownership interests in lots, tracts, parcels, or divisions in the subject subdivision or the portion to be altered. So it says subject subdivision, not just that certain parcel or that certain residential lot, but it's the subject subdivision. Therefore, we have a compelling interest in what affects us with regards to the alteration of this lot. The question I have here is, if that residential lot is changed into a road, and physically that would make the two adjacent lots, lot 10 of subdivision 2 and 11 of subdivision 3, they will become corner lots because you have already a road in place. But for now, lot 10 and 11 will have side yards abutting that residential lot because it's not yet a road. But once it turns into a road, it will become a front yard. And therefore, the provisions come into place. Where you need 20 feet front yard, both frontages on corner lots. The 5 feet side yard doesn't apply anymore because it has changed. If it's a road, then the adjacent lots become front yards. And if you notice, even with this diagram alone, they're all cul-de-sacs. You know, the geometric pattern of this entire subdivision is either cul-de-sacs and loops. And I haven't yet seen a hammerhead pattern over there. So there's something written in here that I browsed this morning that says about geometric pattern of subdivisions in this location.
Just for the record, since we're recording this, you're referring to a number of diagrams that are already in the record. These were used by the county in its presentation. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so we don't need to introduce anything new then.
Yes.
Okay.
So now, with that being road A, that becomes the only road, because there was a mention a while ago of primary access. But where is the secondary access? So that's the fire and medical services. You know, when there's an emergency, there's a need for an ingress, an egress. Where's the secondary road? The 30-foot wide road, does that satisfy the requirements for a main entry to a subdivision? If in case that's a road, we have 14.54 feet left on the western side, which is right next to me, to my property, and have 5.46 feet left on the other side. And even though if we convert this to a road, and it's not the adjacent properties are considered side yards, that's not even including this 10-foot wide utility easement per plot. If that is a requirement, and that's per plot, where is that found in this diagram? Or is there's a provision for that requirement? I guess that should be the main content of what I want to raise up in today's hearing. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wants to make a public comment? Okay, let's. You swear affirm the testimony you'll give today will be the truth?
I do.
And state your name, please.
Joe Phillips. And basically, I just had some comments about this and the fact that I appreciate the fact that they saw from the last time that they saw that it would not support the number of lots that they had drawn up the first time. And the easement or natural vegetation between that lot and the existing lots is acceptable. My only concern is that it does not, when they clear the property for development, that they don't disturb that area. We've had several experiences in the past of the contractor came in, cleared all the way up to the borderline, and then said, oh, well, we'll plant some trees. Well, they're just now, 20 years later, getting a reasonable barrier between the lots. And I do support Michael on his concern on the roadway. That's always been a sticking point for us in the fact that you're adding more traffic to a very residential road that dumps out onto Marigold and then up to Ridgetop. I think that there's going to have to be some traffic adjustments there to mitigate the effect on the Abella Road person or properties. And that was it.
Okay, I just do you live in Ridgeway then too?
I live in on the, let's see, that would be the southwest corner of the development. I don't live in Ridgeway. I live on a lot adjoining on the west side.
Okay. And you mentioned about disturbing the buffer. What kind of vegetation is there now?
Basically, it is fir, some madrona, and then your usual bushes and that.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Any other public comments? You swear affirm the testimony you'll give today will be the truth?
I do.
And state your name for the record, please.
Yestin Mullins.
I'm sorry?
Yestin.
Would you spell that?
I-E-S-T-Y-N.
E-Y-N?
T-Y.
Okay. And how do you spell your last name?
Mullins. M-U-L-L-I-N-S.
All right. All right.
I'll go back to where it was in 2009. The county rejected it. Basically, that you cannot put a road through this area. The initial findings were that it was too narrow. The only option was to find another location. We sat on it. Nothing happened. And I remember the tax parcel change, that it was going to be a home with a driveway through to the home, I think about 2 or 3 years ago. And I thought that was the end of it. And it's reared its head again. What I don't understand is what has changed from 2009. With access. That was initially purchased as a plat for a home. Just looking at the way the neighborhood is designed, you can see that it was a plat. It was never designed for a road. And you're now stuck with two houses that don't have enough space around them for a home. So what has changed since 2009 to the present day to make it a road? And I'm not sure how the county road and private road works, but just looking at a private road with 34 homes, when the entire neighborhood to the bottom of the street with three access points only has 25 homes. So I'm still a little, a private road with 34 homes on the other end makes is somewhat confusing for me. Mr. Smith brought up the comment about a school bus approach. There is school buses that come up the hill. We see one every day. I have since I've lived here for 15 years. I'm not sure how that school bus is going to get into that on through a private access into Monarch Ridge. They do, my kids dropped off, and also a neighbor of mine is dropped up two doors, which is two blocks from where the entrance is. I had a question actually. SEPA, what is SEPA? I didn't look it up, but could someone explain to me what SEPA is?
Stands for State Environmental Policy Act.
Okay.
Probably isn't appropriate for me to comment further, but it's okay. Basically an environmental regulation.
So it's an acronym, okay. The only other question I had is also that it was mentioned to me that the reason this is being pushed into this area is because of some provisions the county has around Barker Creek, which is to the east of the development down by Sigurd Hansen. I can point to it right there, Sigurd Hansen. That's Sigurd Hansen. I believe Barker Creek runs all the way across that. We felt that the to get to that land would have to come through Sigurd Hansen. What has changed there? I believe that that's what the county developers were looking at in 2009 when this was rejected initially. But we seem to keep going back to trying to put a private road through into this area. I think that's pretty much all I've got. I stand by Michael's comments. I feel the same, that it was designed originally as a plot for a home.
And
it's going to affect a lot of people.
Where do you live in relation to the?
I live about 10 homes down.
10 homes south and?
East.
East, okay.
Yeah. On 1052, Poppy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other public comments? Going once, going twice. Okay. All right, certainly. And you've already been sworn, but for the record, identify who you are speaking.
Yes, sir. I was looking at this diagram and
state your name for the record.
So Michael Pangley.
Okay, right. Thanks.
I was looking at this diagram, and it certainly confirms what I have noticed on that street coming through the cul-de-sac and through that intersection. If you notice here, just as exactly as it is on the ground. The center line of that road that is existing to the left, that is Lobelia. And then the center line of the proposed road, they are offset. And to my estimation, that would be more than 5 feet. To navigate through that, if the center lines don't really meet at that intersection, it creates a traffic pattern that passes through the intersection. And even at this moment, there are lost people who come around the neighborhood and use that cul-de-sac as a turnaround or a U-turn. And they come speeding up in that intersection. And how much more would the safety be compromised if those two center lines of the roads who are supposed to be, you know, crossing over are not meeting in the middle? So both drivers from either the left side or the right side of that intersection would have to navigate through an S pattern. And it's not, I don't think it satisfies transportation or engineering requirements. Thank you.
What do you think the drivers are trying to do when they get into that cul-de-sac?
They would have to, this works okay. They would have to make, if you're coming from this proposed road, they may have to navigate a little bit here, a left and then a right to come through the next road. And even so with the oncoming traffic, they'll have to turn left and then come right. So unless it's forced, that I would anticipate this will become a four-way stop sign. But to make that S on that intersection, yeah, it's, I think it's a hazardous idea because the center lines of the roads don't really meet. And I hope that would be addressed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I think that's all for the public comment. Can you hear from the applicant or the county first? From the applicant? Okay.
Mark Coleman again. I previously testified and still under oath. Michael Penguin discussed that he thinks the lots are corner lots. I think I've already explained in the record how they do not meet the definition of a corner lot. Their lot line does not abut, adjoin, or adjacent to a road tract right-of-way or road tract boundary. So therefore, they're not corner lots.
Give a citation for that, the definition, handy or?
They are in the Title 17 definitions.
Okay.
And again, as I spoke about our belt and suspenders approach, we did provide the separation on each side that provides the setbacks that would be provided for if they were corner lots, but they are not corner lots. Okay. He talked about adequate access for fire. The fire marshal has responded to this application and is satisfied with the access as proposed and has provided the conditions of approval. In Kitsap County, we are allowed to go up to 100 units on a single access. A little bit of history that may shed some light on some of the discussions in the record. This is a 10-acre parcel whose legal access is through Lot 11 of Ridgewood Division 2. Immediately to our east is a 10-acre parcel also in the urban growth area that currently does not enjoy any form of legal access. North of that 10-acre parcel is a 10-acre parcel owned by Pune, who has legal access to Central Valley Road through Sigurd Hansen Road. North of that is a 10-acre parcel combined with another 7 or 8-acre parcel that has legal access to Ridgetop Boulevard. There had been discussions with the fire marshal and the planning director and some public works personnel that perhaps the transportation for all of these parcels should be addressed comprehensively. However, there was a lot of concern that this would create a lot more traffic into Ridgeview Division 2, and there were other questions about access through Sigurd Hansen Road, where there was a portion of it was an easement. And so while it was explored, it was abandoned. And so there is no provision for this 10-acre parcel to provide legal access to any of the other parcels in the vicinity. So we have also provided protection that what you see is what you get. There's not more coming later in terms of transportation and access. The traffic impact analysis, yes, it was done some time ago. However, it is conservative in nature in that it was addressing the traffic patterns on Poppy Court, Lobelia Court, and Marigold with a much higher level of traffic contribution than is currently proposed. Everything was fine within the plat and within the Ridgeview development. There has been a number of things happened on Ridgetop Boulevard since this time, and there are other things that are planned. The county has looked comprehensively at Ridgetop Boulevard and felt it was not necessary to restudy anything on Ridgetop Boulevard because of the thoroughness of the review that the county has done itself on Ridgetop Boulevard. The 10-foot utility easements are not shown on this drawing. Those will be part of the final plat. They'll be created as part of the final plat. And where we don't have 10 feet, we only provide what we have. So there could be a utility easement on this side if requested by the county or any of the local utilities. We can provide a 10-foot utility easement here. However, this being a private road, the use of those 10-foot utility easements is often less important. That 10-foot utility easement is primarily occupied by franchise utilities such as Puget Power, who prefer not to be in the right-of-way based upon the conditions of franchise agreements related to right-of-way versus easements adjacent to right-of-way. Mr. Phillips was concerned about protection of the proposed native vegetation buffer that we're providing with our application. And I think the protection comes from the county's implementation procedures. One of the first inspections that we'll have when we get to construction plan, to construction of the development, one of the first inspections required by the county is the clearing limit staking. So the county will approve the clearing limit staking, which is hanging ribbons intervisible all along the perimeter of the project, so that that native vegetation buffer will be identified and shown and protected by virtue of that inspection, showing where the limits of what the contractor can go up to. He can't go up to the property line. He will stop where the approved inspection limits are. He also talked about traffic on the existing streets. I think I just answered that up above. Then Edson Mullins talked about the school bus. I do not anticipate that the school bus will enter into this project. School buses are okay with private roads, but they do not like going into dead-end type developments. So my anticipation is the school children in this development will walk to an existing bus stop on Poppy Court or Lobelia, or as may be directed by the school district as to where that bus stop should be. He also asked what SEPA stands for, and you correctly identify the State Environmental Policy Act. And as I said in my earlier discussions, primarily is to address impacts that may not already be mitigated through application of existing codes. He also identified Barker Creek to the east, and that is correct. Barker Creek does lie east of us, a significant salmon stream, well protected by critical area ordinances. In fact, it is some, I'm going to say, 1,500 feet away from our parcel. There's a full 10-acre parcel adjacent to us before you get to the edge of the urban growth area, and then Barker Creek is another 600 or 700 feet to the east of that line. In fact, that was one of the reasons the urban growth boundary was selected to be there, was a recognition that that natural feature was to be left rural to avoid development pressures to be placed upon it. He also asked what has changed, and I think that there was a significant discussion between you and Planner Mr. Smith on that, which I amplified some as to what has changed in terms of how this alteration can be supported at the present time. You did ask a question, which we checked our records, and that was the date of that revision to the CC&Rs. Our records show that it was 2 September 1995. A side note that really isn't very relevant, however, it is a historical issue. At the time when the applicant purchased that lot 11, he went to the neighbors on either side, not the current ownership. So what happened historically doesn't apply to them. So I want to make that clear. But he did get letters from those adjoining property owners acknowledging an understanding that this road was going to happen. Had he recorded those documents, I don't think we would have any of this discussion today, but unfortunately they were not recorded. Okay. Do you have any other questions for me?
I don't.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, do you have any follow-up?
I'd like to speak about the natural vegetation buffer. There are, when we establish the clearing limits and we look at drip lines, and sometimes there's going to be some trees that are not going to, that are in the buffer that might have to come out based on wind throw and other issues. The whole idea is to provide a buffer, and staff can work with the applicant as far as identifying those trees that may come down based on wind, and we can just have to replace them. And it may take a while, but the ultimate goal is to provide a functional screen for the long term.
Okay.
And I wanted to have you look at page 9, E, and the staff report. I do go into detail about the fire marshal's comments. And then on page 15, conditions 15 through 18 detail what those conditions are. The way the our SIP permit system works, we have those conditions, or what we normally would include in a memo, are in our permit system. So what I normally do, or staff, is take those conditions out and then create a document normally. At this point in time, staff wants to know if that would be adequate to address as far as the documentation record as far as from the fire marshal.
Well, usually when we have, if there are written comments, you know, we'd like to have those as part of the record. Did you get something in writing from the fire marshal?
The fire marshal does not put things in writing. Oh. It just puts the conditions in our permit system.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask for an exhibit that he didn't create, so he didn't make, so that'll be fine then. Okay. So the information in your staff report regarding the fire marshal came to you how?
Through our permit system.
Okay.
we have a conditions tab in our system, and I just copied and pasted those into the staff report.
Anything else?
As far as the notice of application, I'm not sure what happened. My guess is that it was prepared, the notice of application was prepared on January 9th, and it didn't go out to the 14th.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay.
Mark Kuhlman again. My team politely reminded me that there was a significant issue brought up that I should have responded to. Michael Penguin talked about the fact that the center lines of these roads don't line up perfectly, and in fact they don't. However, the lanes, the traveled lanes, will line up appropriately. This may be a surveying discussion more than a traffic discussion, but center lines are often laid out for surveying purposes to create monuments so that you can then measure off from those monuments and determine where property corners are. What's important is that the lanes themselves line up to avoid this disjointedness that Mr. Penguin was addressing. And the lanes will line up even if the centerline intersections aren't precisely at the same point. These issues will all be reviewed by Kitsap County as part of the construction plan approval, and they will address all those safety concerns as part of their normal routine in reviewing the construction plan approval. I'm sorry I forgot that the first time.
Thank you. There's nothing else, just as a matter of general information. The rules require that I issue a written decision within 10 business days of today's date. So if you're figuring really two weeks from today, there will be a written decision, and that will be available through the county. We provide the decision to the county, and then the county disseminates it. So that'll be it for today, and so I will close the hearing on this matter. Thank you very much for your comments and testimony.